everyone. I'm Ishita Cabra, the founder and CEO of BuyRotation, the world's first social fashion rental app. I created the platform so that we can transform fashion consumption for good. You can save money, make money, wear new clothes, make new friends, and save the planet one rental at a time.
I'm so proud to say that this podcast is brought to you by NatWest Business Banking. Whether you're thinking about starting a new business or are already running one, NatWest could help you meet your goals sooner, no matter how big or small. I know how tough it is running a business, and we are so grateful to all the other businesses and partners for their support. NatWest is here to support your business with many tools and tips. So, if you've got a big idea that you want to turn into reality, what are you waiting for? Search NatWest Startups to get started. With NatWest, tomorrow begins today. Business banking is available to eligible customers in the UK. Specific account eligibility applies.
Today, I'm joined by Akash Mehta, co-founder and CEO of Fable & Mane, an Ayurvedic-inspired hair wellness brand, which he founded with his sister, Nikita. Prior to founding the brand, Akash worked at household names, very glamorous luxury names such as Burberry, Dior, Estee Lauder, for which he was placed on Forbes 30 Under 30 in the media and marketing list. Alongside running Fable & Mane, he also hosts his own podcast, Founder Beauty, which, by the way, is incredible, where he interviews fellow beauty entrepreneurs and is a board member of LVMH and Global Guardian for UNICEF. Akash, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Akash, first things first, what's currently on rotation for you?
That's a great question. There are so many things on rotation, but the one that pops to mind first is my puzzles, which is probably a bit obscure, but I'm an ex-engineer. So for me, I love solving things. So every morning I wake up and every evening I do puzzles. There's an amazing app called Puzzle Page. You get about 8 to 9 puzzles a day, and I won't sleep till I finish all of my 9 puzzles every day.
That is amazing. Yeah. And yeah, something we missed out on your bio, that you were actually an engineer before you went into the land of beauty and luxury.
I mean, I guess studying engineering perhaps is a bit different to being an engineer. wasn't the best one. That's the change of career. But four years engineering at Imperial wasn't an easy feat, but definitely something that's well behind me now.
We're going to talk about that a little more
as
to, you know, why you made this sort of very different career move from what you probably studied at uni.
Yeah.
But these puzzles, are they like jigsaw puzzles or are they like mind?
So the ones I do are traditionally on like your iPhone or an iPad, and they are a variety of different, like either Japanese or traditional puzzles like Sudoku. You also have Wordle on there. So it's a variety of different ones. I also have my physical like hard copy puzzle books, and I do a lot of escape rooms. I think I've done in the last 2 weeks 4. So that says a lot about me.
That is a lot.
I did one yesterday night as well.
That is crazy. Yeah. I mean, you're a man of commitment though.
Yeah.
Like when you like something, you really go for it.
And I think like solving puzzles is one of the best techniques for training your brain. So my old CEO at Dior, he used to sometimes call me in his room, and like sometimes like in the middle of the day, like his assistant would call me and I'd be like, oh my God, am I in trouble? People were like, oh my God, Claude, what's calling you? So I'd go to his office and then he would be like, sit. And I'd be like, okay. And you're like, he started testing me in puzzles. So he got me really into puzzles again. He had a puzzle book on his desk. And I thought, if the CEO of Dior is doing puzzles every day, there's got to be something there, right? So I started doing puzzles.
Yeah. I love that because I don't think I'm a great reader. Like for me, reading is more, I love fiction and I would do that more on holiday when I'm trying to disconnect. So maybe this could be something I need to try
out. I'm the exact same as Ishita. I do not read. I think I have this fire like syndrome inside of me where I can't sit still. You can't put me.
You don't want to do a passive activity.
No,
you want
like
to
I
do
can't
something.
Just stay still reading a book. So maybe Audible on like a 1.5 or 2x is okay for me because I'm like on the go. But I've got to be doing it while with something.
Now, I'm definitely going to give this. What's the app called again?
Puzzle Page.
Puzzle Page. I'm going to give this app a go and actually buy one of those books, old school.
I'll send you a list of links to get them.
Did you ever watch The Office?
People always, sometimes as a joke, someone said I remind me of that Best Boss mug. There's a guy or something.
Oh, I have that mug.
Yeah.
My intern gave it to me last
year. And then someone was about to give it to me. And then my other employee was like, that's not a compliment. I was like, what does that mean? I don't know.
It is a compliment.
Is it?
Well, there's a guy in there anyway called Stanley. And he does crossword puzzles every day.
Okay, maybe that's why they thought about giving me that mug. Okay, because apparently he's like an interesting type of boss, but yeah.
Yeah, that's Michael, yeah, but that's, he's hilarious.
Okay.
So now let's talk a little bit about your background, yeah. Right? So you said that you studied engineering at Imperial. Yeah. Why did you end up going into Dior and Burberry and Estee? Like, what's the connection? Is there a connection?
Yeah, so it sounds like on first glance quite obscure, but actually when you go deeper into it, it kind of makes perfect sense. So growing up, I was very good at math and physics. And naturally, I think as during my GCSEs, A-level, I couldn't really decide what I wanted to study. I did have a dream to always work in kind of space. So like NASA was my big dream.
Oh, I love that.
Or even aviation. So I did a lot of my internships before I went to university were in like Airbus, and I was shadowing electrical engineers.
I feel like I read this about Airbus. Airbus. Or you told me.
I told you. Yes. And BMW in Germany. So I did a lot of these experiences. And I think naturally engineering seemed like the logical fit. When I went to uni and I went to Imperial, I actually realized like it's so different to math and physics. So the math modules I was like acing. The physics kind of, it wasn't really physics model, but those kind of modules were, I was doing really well, but the coding and all of those modules, which I never kind of ever saw before, I was way behind the average. Like there were students that were building computers since they were like 7 years old, and I could never, anyway, they've learned like all the languages. You know, coming from 10 A stars GCSE, 5 A stars A level to then failing, I actually failed my second year at uni. And that was like a big wake up call. Like, do I do something different? Do I spend my life doing a different industry, or do I go back and finish my degree? It was a really hard time because it was a second year at university. So technically, you know, I could have one more year and graduate, or I have to reapply. And then basically by the time I would go to uni, I would have done 3 years of another degree, which I didn't get. Mm-hmm. So I ended up making the decision to go back and complete my degree, which I'm really grateful for. But I said to myself, after I graduate, I will not spend my life doing engineering because I'm not passionate about it. So naturally, I went into an industry that I felt most comfortable with. My father has actually been in the beauty industry for 40 years.
Wow.
So I think subconsciously it was like a natural path that I was sitting in his meetings from a very young age, hearing how he works, how FMCG works, which as far as moving consumer goods. I was looking at this from I could be good at this. I've been trained my whole life for this. So I went to work at Estee Lauder, and the rest was history. What is worth mentioning, at that time of university, I was singing on the side. So I would like go to lectures and go to like the studio after.
You're a man of many talents. So
that was like an issue in my path, but I wasn't a very good singer. But I did busk. I was on Portobello Road singing.
Wow.
Did
you make a lot of money busking?
Busking, you'd make about £300 to £400
a day,
a session. But you also have to get the rights to busk, and that's it's not the most profitable. You do it for your the love of singing,
and
put yourself out there. But I was working more with some producers and some minor record labels, and then they were telling me, you know, this is a time where you got to grow your own following. So I started posting covers. A few went viral. I have some Spotify songs, like 1 million+ streams, which is weird.
Before you were doing podcast series.
Before all of that.
Wow.
So I think that helped me get some following. Mm. And then because I had my own following, I realized at that time, micro-influencers and influencers were starting. And I kind of took the route to let me work in corporate world with that understanding that if I built my own account through some ad strategies, etc., I can do this for a brand. So I was one of the first social media managers at Estee Lauder. While a lot of people were thinking it's more lucrative to be an influencer, I went in-house to be an influencer within brands kind of thing. And that was my career there. From Estee to Dior, for about 4 or 5 years, I was kind of managing social media influencer marketing for these brands.
Amazing. That was just being built up as well in those days.
That was just being starting. So, I was the first to bring to Dior micro influencers, even paying like influencers less than their top elite, like VIP influencers. So I was kind of telling my CEO the worth of someone with 10,000 followers. And I kind of broke it down in such a simplistic form to him. I was like, look, you could have someone like Bella Hadid that's got 1 million in reach, but then if only 5% buy, and of that only X have purchasing power of Y, you know, you're going to get X amount of sales. But if you have someone with 10,000 followers and 80% of their following want to buy and they have the purchasing power even higher, that could actually result in more sales. So why are you omitting this without, you know, it's not kind of hurting the other subset. So then he was like, okay, if you control this, go for it. So he gave me full rein, and it was fun. And I want to add one last thing, which is quite funny. It goes to my dad being like a big mentor in my life. Like, he actually studied engineering.
What?
And he went into the beauty industry and he failed engineering. So I've been so inspired by his life that kind of following suit was a really beautiful journey for me as well.
It sounds like these experiences at university, you know, they and even, you know, this experience maybe basking and being judged and, you know, people might give you money or they might not because you put yourself out there. It sounds like these experiences really matured you pretty early on
Definitely.
In life.
I've changed a lot over the years in a beautiful way if I look back, but I was always someone who grew up with very little skin, if that makes sense, right? You talk about thick skin. And
yeah.
I had very little. I was very sensitive, always the quietest in the room, didn't want to put myself out there, would get stage fright. I didn't sing until I got to uni, and I never went to any of my school competition, talent competitions, even though I knew I could sing in the shower. I just didn't do that. And then I think busking and little ways to get yourself out of your comfort zone, sort of fake it in those moments to eventually start liking it and being like, oh, I can do this. You build that armor, you build that thicker skin. But you have to always remember who you ultimately are inside that. So every decision I do now, I accept who I am today, but I always talk to that younger self and be like, hey, I hear you, I see you, you're not forgotten. Mm. In this moment, let me hear you, what you want to do, because there's beautiful, like, assets to you that I still need to have today, like that humility, that vulnerability that I still want to keep, because that's ultimately who I am. But it's okay to also accept who I am today is also very different. And I think that's been really interesting, seeing my journey from an inner and outer self over the last 10 years specifically.
I think we're kind of similar that way, where, you know, we're quite self-aware and we know how many layers we have and how we can be quite complex. I kind of view you as an extroverted introvert.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Exactly. Before I was an introvert, then I was an introvert extrovert. Now I'm an extrovert introvert. I hope I don't become just an extrovert. I like my extrovert introvert side. And that's where it's important to converse your old self, you know, speak to that person. Because if you shut that person out, you will lose a big part of your identity as well.
But do you feel like there was that particular moment then that which made you feel like, I don't care what other people think of me. I know I'm studying engineering. It doesn't mean that I need to have a job in finance or in engineering. Like, you know, maybe that trauma in your second year of uni, is that the moment where you were like, I'm going to do what's right for me?
Definitely. I think, like, ultimately, as human beings, it's very hard to fully not care what people think. Like, we all do at some extent, right?
But when it comes to social media.
Especially social media. And especially, like, who, right? Like, some people might care a lot about what the masses think, like their whole following. Some might care just what the family think, right? Like just 2-3 people or their loved one. But ultimately, I think in those moments where I used to be someone who fully needed to be with someone every night, have care what people think, validated by what people think, because I was quite insecure growing up, I ultimately had to realize during those moments where I failed and I was a bit more lonelier. And there were some dark moments in there, you know, where you're really crying at yourself to sleep at night and you really don't understand, you know, you felt really lonely and you have certain people who are there for you, but you know, you don't really feel that they fully understand what you're going through. I think then you realize you got to like breathe a lot in those moments and be like, okay, right now, who can I rely on the most? Myself. So let myself help myself.
Sounds like a lot of soul searching. That
a lot
particular,
of soul searching. I think this is why, like, I'm really big advocate for like mindful business. So while I have my whole business acumen, like, I'm really starting to develop and learn about my mindful acumen, because I need this on this journey. You often,
what is mindful acumen?
I'm kind of making it up now, but what I kind of mean is like your ability to separate the fact that you might want success and this and that, but ultimately, what drives your happiness? Right, happiness isn't always governed by the things that we think drives that first, right? And often you see it by people that want to have $1 million business or grow a team, and then they get that to that point. And then they're like, okay, what now? Or they'll feel a bit empty suddenly, or they feel their friends are not as close to them as before. Like, it's such a common trend I've seen in goal setting and achieving. And ultimately we think goals equate to happiness. And I think for me, I've realized I need to be on any journey, whether it's business, life, whatever, with a mindful approach of checking in with myself, understanding ultimately this is great, but what also is important to me. And there's so many factors I'm discovering, right? It could be people I care about. It could be my mental health, my physical health. It could be my surroundings. It could be how I feel fulfilled. Like, there's so many more factors than just my business P&L or my growth, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you can think about those things now because you've kind of made it? You know, you are very successful. Fable and Main is generating a lot of revenue. You do have amazing partnerships with some of the top retailers in the world.
Yeah.
Do you think you can only afford that sort of luxury now to have this mindful acumen now?
I think in hindsight, I would go back and probably start the journey earlier because I think we have to remember when you're starting, you're in a rush. You're in like, it just, everything is so quick. So you don't have time to reflect, sit back. Now, yes, I have the luxury. Do I have a team? I have a lot of people that I can rely on taking a step back and take those moments. But I will be honest, these mindful moments are often not during like the main hours. Like mm-hmm. It's usually at home. So I always had the ability to go deeper into it. I think the only reason I'm doing it now is because I've got a life coach, number one. Mm-hmm. I think it's so powerful speaking to someone. And two, I'm learning about Ayurveda a lot. Mm-hmm. And I, this is something I will really say. This
but that is work related though.
No, Ayurveda personally. Because Ayurveda, yes, it's in the work, but I'm taking Ayurvedic courses just for myself. I'm learning about this 4,000 to 5,000 year old ancient ritual science. And I'm learning so much about Ayurvedic ways to achieve certain things that is actually nothing to do with business. And I wish I had some of those learnings a bit early on in my life. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I came from a very spiritual background. So like, you know, I grew up with meditation, yoga, but there's so much more.
And we're Hindu.
Yeah, and Hindu, exactly. Yeah. But there's still so much more, I think, when people can go deeper into it, that will help you in so many life moments. For example, when I was in my darkest moments, failing university, you know, I wish I had some of those principles and mindsets to go to at those points, right? So I really want to find a way to help anyone, no matter where you are in your journey, what age, this is a universal learning, whether it's Ayurveda, whether it's another tradition, whether it's even finding your own mechanisms, right? I think we always need it no matter what.
Yeah, I love that. There's a quote that I really resonate with, which I think you'll enjoy as well. In the depth of winter, I finally realized within me there lay an invincible summer.
Oh, I love that. That's like the perfect summary of what we're speaking about, right? It's like the power of the mind, whether you're using quotes or something, it's how you perceive things. It can really change everything. So that's a great one.
Thank you.
I'll keep that one.
You'll keep that one. Yeah. Tell us more about the brand for the listeners who don't.
So Fable & Main, it's a modern hair wellness brand, as you've beautifully said in your intro. In a nutshell, it kind of stems from my own childhood memories. So growing up, my grandma used to come from India. You know, me and my sister were born and raised in London. And she used to massage these oils into her hair. And while she would massage, she would read us stories. So story time and hair care is what we grew up with. Thus the name Fable & Main, story and hair.
Love it.
We actually took a bet and LinkedIn messaged Sephora. With just the concept, you know, we didn't really have a fully fledged brand at that point and they loved it. And we kind of in our heart knew they would because we were frustrated with the Sephora landscape. We were like confused. Why is there no Ayurvedic brand? Why is there no Indian brand, especially in hair when India is known for its beautiful hair. You have 95% of the world's wigs made of Indian hair, just dyed in different colors. So India is like, you know, known for that strong, healthiest hair. And it ultimately goes back to oiling, right? And using it as treatment oils. And you have a lot of this Ayurvedic practices with that, which is like sneha for the body, which is lovingly putting on oil on your body. You have abhyanga and like all these different massages. So for us, we really saw a gap in the market for a clean, conscious, cultural brand deep rooted in Indian heritage. Mm-hmm. And we wanted it for us as Sephora junkies. We were frustrated that, you know, I don't have access to all the Indian grocery stores and some of those ingredients don't smell very good. So, you know, for my day-to-day busy life, why can't I go to a Sephora or a Selfridges, pick up a product that has all the benefits, has a beautiful aroma, and reminds me of those traditions. And both my grandmas unfortunately passed away during the year that we were starting it. It was one of the main catalysts to creating it. So this is sort of an homage to them. And, you know, unfortunately, all my grandparents can't see what we're doing, but to know that hopefully they'll be very proud of bringing the story that they passed down from their generations to our generation, and we will continue to other generations, but not just within the South Asian community and diaspora, but for everyone.
Yeah.
That was very important for us.
I mean, I love it as an Indian. I actually use the Holy Roots oil overnight to make sure my hair was ready for you and the podcast recording. But you've got some incredible fans like Malala.
Yeah.
And who's the actress from Stranger Things? You told me about.
Oh, yeah. Sadie Sink. I've been talking to her via email. She's been such an amazing person.
But you have incredible fans from like many different networks.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just sort of celebrities and influencers.
Yeah, we found out like Stranger Things uses us on set, which is amazing. They do head massages and oiling. We've been used, they've even bought the products, which is crazy. I was like, we'll send you. House of Dragon uses it. Like a lot of amazing TV film. And then like, as you said, with people like Malala and stuff, we've been amazingly, had these great opportunities to work now on with our new Mahamain Smoother Train Hair Oil, which is a leave-in oil, to now start working with like red carpets. Because all our products before this product launch was pre-washed. So it was a bit harder to reach certain industries and areas. But now we have a finishing oil. We've been able to, I would say, dress the hair like how you would with clothes, with the likes of Simone Ashley, Julia Garner, you know, Inventing Anna. We had Mindy Kaling on the Oscars and Michelle Yeoh. So that was it's been amazing. So yeah, really, really cool.
How does one get through to all these people? Like, you know, tell us the secrets. I mean,
yeah,
you know, for people listening in, I'm sure there are some founders who are like,
there's different ways. I would say there's a couple of avenues. One is if you're friends with them, obviously helps. That's like the hardest avenue. The most logical, easiest way is going via the stylist. So for fashion, it's their fashion stylist. For beauty, it's their hair and makeup stylist. Often they're represented by the biggest agencies. So like for makeup and hair, the Wall Group is one of the biggest. You know, you would contact them and then you would ask them for the list of the celebrities and the sort of events that they'll be using. And then you would pay the stylist to use the product. But you also have to get approval by the stylist and sometimes the celebrity as well. The agent has to approve it if it's a brand that they want to be associated with and if they don't have a contract already that's going against it. If you want to get the celebrity to pose, it's a whole other conversation. You probably have to speak to their agent. But today, if you have budget, you can go really with anyone. I think it's really about being smart with when and what you're doing it with, right? We have limited budgets as brands. So I think it's about realizing what is important for the brand image and eventually, potentially like return of investment. And what is your ego?
Yeah.
Sometimes I say, ego, leave aside. Mm-hmm. I would love to be with all these celebrities, but I don't have the budget to be there. And it doesn't necessarily, it's not innately as important ultimately to what we want to do as a brand, right? Mm-hmm. We want to be with the community. So for me, I'd rather spend that money doing a pop-up with my customers. So for example,
you did a beautiful one. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. In LA we've done, and like recently right now, we've done an open casting call for our customers. So there are models for our next shoots and stuff. We haven't used any celebrities as our kind of faces.
Yeah.
So ultimately I think that's kind of the brand we're going for, is a bit more of a community loved, authentic storytelling brand, but always feels good when you can dress a few celebrities here and there with their hairstyle.
Who's like someone that you would love to get on the radar of? One person.
Maybe like Oprah or Michelle Obama.
That's really cool.
Beyonce would be really cool.
The
funniest thing is a lot of the celebrities that I also love have beauty brands, as we all know. There's a whole like wave of beauty brands by celebrities. So often they won't be able to, because it'll be like a semi-conflict of interest if it's a hair brand, for example. But yeah, to be fair, like I'm not as excited by those things, because after 3 years, we've had a lot, right? Mm-hmm. The Kardashians, everyone's posted and done this.
Oh, really? Interesting.
So for me, that initial excitement goes away. And after a while, you're like, what's so much more exciting is my actual customers that come to me in the street.
On the street, yeah.
If it's a celebrity that comes to me and says, I've been using it every day, I'm like, love it. Like that's also just as exciting, right? Mm. But I don't want it to be like I'm paying them to post and then they don't ever use it again. It's
exactly.
Not as fulfilling. It goes back to the mindful part of what you're doing.
No, and I mean, you've been in the industry for a while because, as you said, you set it up for Estee, you set it up for Dior, so you know how this works.
I know. And I came in as an engineer to these industries, right? Like putting numbers into them. So I was helping my CEOs realize how to make this a bit less gray, because ultimately influencer marketing is one of the hardest to track and to understand its ROI, but it can now become one of the most expensive. So while we know it works, brands are scared about what their ROI potential would be. Mm-hmm. So my job was to track as much as possible, to collect as much data. And even with 20% data capturing, you can still get more or less a good understanding if it's worth it or not.
Yeah.
Whether it's trackable links, affiliate codes, etc. But I think ultimately you got to kind of mirror and marry all of your strategies and keep on going to the times and the trends. Mm-hmm. So now I heard recently from internal sources, like, you know, Revolve is investing less into, for example, influencers as they did before, right? Mm-hmm. But ultimately I'm like, it makes sense, right?
They've done that.
They have to evolve and change their strategies.
Exactly.
So while influencers might be frustrated that their budgets have cut and they're not doing the trips, it's like, I'm actually on Revolve's side. I'm like, that's good. Move on with new ways. But still
Revolve needs to evolve.
Exactly.
Sorry, I thought I was being funny.
I love that. Revolve needs to evolve. And they are. And I think that's really healthy for businesses to understand that there's not one pie that fits all. You got to have a bit of everything. Yeah.
I love that. And it's great because you've obviously got a lot of years of experience in this. So, you know, as you said, you've done it with Fable in Maine, for example, for about 3 years now.
Yeah.
And you kind of, it sounds like you're moving more into the community side of
Definitely.
Things.
Definitely. Yeah. I think it's also about making sure you hire the right people. So like for me, for example, I've got an influencer.
You've got a big team. Tell us.
Yeah. Someone's fully focused on influencers. So her job will obviously be influencers. So it's like, you can still sing to that. You have your budget. Don't deprioritize that. At the same time, I need to have my other divisions turned on as well. You can't make a beautiful recipe without all the ingredients.
And how is Akash the boss like, and Akash the friend? Is he different?
Going back to my initial comment about changing my skin, I've noticed I've become a different leader. And I think it's important that I am, because I used to start this company being friend first, leader. It's hard to say. Why can't a friend be leader, right? But friend first, boss second, if that makes sense. It's probably a hard statement to say, because you can be both. But I meant I was more of a, let's hang out after work. Mm-hmm. Let's go do these team bonding. Let's chill. Like, oh, you don't want to come in? No problem. Because sometimes when you are strict, they'll take that as, do you not know my competency, or do you not know my experience? You're very junior. Like, they'll try to like spin it back in their head even. So I had to really learn that's okay. Maybe when you're two people, now we're like nearly 40.
Yeah.
I have to change my ways. And it takes, you know what's happened? It's taken a few hits for me to evolve and change. So like seeing people quit has been really hard, but also good and healthy for me, because it's normal. And sometimes I always say to myself, is this something I could have done better? What could I have changed? Was it me being too friendly or not friendly? You know, you always go to those points as a leader, but ultimately
you doubt yourself.
But I have to now remember, like, it's just normal. It's the business.
Attrition.
Yeah, exactly. So I think now my balance is, I am definitely still a cool, friendly boss. I have fun moments, but I am also very clear and strict when needs to be. And I will turn on that mode very clearly when the business warrants it. So I'm an advocate and for the business. That is my most priority. The business ultimately helps everyone. So I kind of make sure I always prioritize the business needs, as well as, of course, put on my HR hat and the employees' needs. But I think what I used to do a lot is sometimes prioritize like them. So if they wanted to move, let's say, I want to have a bit of CRM in my role, I'll be like, okay, go for it. And it sounds bad, because you want to build a company on people. But I realize if I don't prioritize the business in that, the people will suffer long term. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There will be unclear.
Well, there will be no business.
There'll be no business.
Yeah.
They'll be unclear on their role. So ultimately, I've had to make, you know, different decisions now that say, look, I hear you, I'm listening, let's figure this out. But ultimately, that's not what Fable and Main needs right now, right? So can we rediscuss that, or let's look at other options? And that's been a really interesting growth for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
And what about like, you know, the Akash that we know on Instagram, for example, because you're always so bubbly, always on, quite extroverted. But now we've learned quite a few different things about you as well. Do you feel like you're a different person for the gram?
I definitely probably show way more of my ups and downs. And I think it's ultimately because I barely post a lot anyway. So when I do post, it's just like usually just those ups that I choose. And then I don't really feel the need to go to Instagram to talk about those down moments. So I do want people to know there is a balance to cash there. It's not always this bubbly, like social media perfect.
But I guess you do it in sort of channels such as these, where you can have a deep conversation.
Yeah, where people are more in tune to listen.
Yes.
I think that's such an ephemeral space that even if I wanted to go deeper, people wouldn't even listen more than 3 seconds, 5 seconds. So
exactly.
It's ultimately going to be redundant.
So there's a time and place for everything.
I think
everything. So.
And I think like, I just don't take it all of it. I just don't take it too seriously. Ultimately, meaning I am very authentic with what I portray and show. I tend to show and post when I feel like it. Mm. And sometimes I've done the most incredible things and I just wasn't feeling like posting. And I just didn't post. And I'm feeling that lately.
And I'm just like, normal. I'm not in the mood.
Yeah, it's normal. Yeah. I think like it's, for me, I use social media as my memory book. Mm. That is the most important, which is why I hide all my likes and that kind of stuff. And I don't really do this stuff with like paid posts and that kind of stuff. I'm just like, this is just my memory book. It's like my collage. Keep on posting. And I go back a lot and look at my old reels and videos and smile. So it's nice to have that.
You've kind of found that balance where, you know, it's not something that guides you and makes you react, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I need, and you know, I did a TEDx talk on this about mindful.
What haven't you done?
This is during your days. But yeah, I did a TEDx talk on kind of mental health and social media. So I did a lot of research on this. So this comes from years of researching it, of learning the dopamine effects of using social media, the changes in white matter that happens when you're using social media, which will ultimately cause Alzheimer's at a much earlier age. We're in it right now. We're not going to see that till a bit later. Yeah, it's proven. You know, internet addiction disorder is such a big topic. Over the population of USA has it, and we don't even realize it. We probably all have it, you know, sitting here in this room, and it's just something we don't realize. So I've had to be very mindful of my consumption. I had fun ways as well. One little tidbit, fun thing I did that really worked well. Now, ultimately, I'm just quite good at controlling it. But when I was a bit addicted to it, posting a lot when I was at Dior, I was posting every day. I was so obsessed.
I mean, it was
social.
Your job.
I had a bet with one of my best friends in Paris. And at the end of the week, we would send our screenshots of our screen time of our phone. And whoever had the most on social media would have to pay the other person 20 euros. So ultimately, it was so fun. Like on Fridays, I would be like, oh my God, I've used so much. I'd actually be like, I'm not on my phone on Saturday. And it was like such a like silly but fun way to actually control your screen time and monitor it.
So, yeah. Getting competitive with it, basically.
So if you're pretty much like, I'm aware I'm using it a lot, but I'm still not changing it, I invite everyone to challenge a friend to a social media screen time duel and see who wins.
I love that. Gonna give that a go.
Yeah.
So I love that your dad's your mentor. He's like the real life example, the authentic example of how you make it really from nothing, right?
Yeah.
Are there any other sort of life lessons that you picked up from anyone else?
Yeah, it kind of always goes back to family for me. Like my mom always told me growing up, and it still stuck with me, always give if you decide to give, but never expect anything back. And I think it goes with everything I do. So like, let's say you give a gift to someone and you're like, it's worth X amount, and they give you a gift back and it's worth Y amount, 10X less. Doesn't matter. You chose to give that. That's your decision. Don't expect anything back. If you even do something, that's a different gesture back, right?
And by the way, as your friend who's known you for maybe a year now, I will say you're definitely a giver. You've never asked for anything in return. You know, I can say that you've made so many introductions.
And likewise.
For me.
And you've done it always from your own heart as well. Like you're the same as well. I think I don't know if it's an upbringing thing or whatever, or just innate personality thing that some people are born with. But
I think it's about values.
It's the values. And I think you're definitely someone, that's why we connect like as friends, more than just industry friends, is because you have the exact same values I do. Like you will always give from your heart, but you'll never expect anything back. Now, I think there's a difference of like giving and then being kind of misvalued or being mistreated, that deserves some form of like, okay, I'm going to stop giving to this person. I think you have the same attitude. If someone like disrespects or does something wrong, you got to draw the line of distinction. But ultimately, it doesn't.
But we know where we stand.
We know where we stand.
And we learn from it.
And sometimes when you give, you become the beneficiary. So I always say sometimes like we're the selfish ones because I give and I get excitement by my giving.
Yeah.
Like you know, when you give a gift, you like open it, and you want to see their face, right? That's like
Don't
a sign of
it?
Like, I'm getting a gift too back through your reaction.
I love that.
Yeah, so I think that's important.
Okay, it's been a very heavy But very interesting conversation. I feel like I've gone through some layers of definitely. Akash.
Yeah,
right?
I love
Do you think
that.
I should be like a therapist or something?
I think you probably are that in all your roles as a company owner, leader, a podcast host. So I think you probably don't need to add another one to your list because you'll be having no time. But yeah.
So something lighthearted, okay? And I hope you have something funny for us.
I hope we do.
No pressure. What's a fashion faux pas that you've made that you can't seem to forget?
So you know what? I think there's years of faux pas of, I got a reminder from a very close friend, Paris, met her in Kenya, and she was in New York with me. And she said to me like very bluntly, like honestly, like it was the funniest thing. She goes, you know, like you have no style. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, yeah, you have no style. You always wear just like boring colors. And I was like, that's my style. That's my style. And she's like, no, but, and I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, I think I need to have pop of color. Like, so I started like introducing color into my, I guess like style. It's really not a faux pas, right? But in a way it's sort of like, my faux pas was never experimenting with colors. And now I love it.
Did you wear like a crazy like Versace shirt or something?
I'm still like probably not. Like, you know, like hints of like the watch is green. I have like pink on my Nike.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
There was like elements.
Showing a little bit more of your taste. I mean,
I'm still going to be blues, blacks, navies, beiges, grays, but pops of color. Nice.
Yeah. I love that.
It brings a bit of personality to your look.
I think so. But the focus is on the hair anyway.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Which you have amazing.
Exactly. So you've got to like let that shine, you know?
Yeah. And my final question before we go into a quick fire round.
Yeah.
If you could be an expert in any other subject besides the ones you are an expert in already, what would you choose?
My first thought was going to like engineering and just becoming better at it, because I still would have loved to work for NASA or something. Like,
you have some unfinished business.
Yeah, because maybe I will one day, let's see. Like, someone applied for a product manager role for one of our like openings in Fable in Maine. And obviously, you know, we're making shampoo conditioners, but she was like she's at NASA right now. She's like, I built like this moon rover, but do you think it could translate into your brand? I love your products. I'm like, not a moon rover, but like her product development skills, like working with different labs and parts. And I was like, and part of me was like, hire her now. And then I was like, no, it's not going to work. But like, you know, that made me realize I have this excitement when I hear the word NASA. So maybe, I would love to be in maybe a bit more skilled in that. But if I was leaving engineering, just a whole new skill, I think I would have loved to been really skilled, if the question is skilled, in
expert. Some
expert in is something sporty and being an Olympian. Like, I'm clearly not, but like that would be something I would love to have done.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Something different from your existing world. Very cool.
Athletes are incredible. And I think that kind of determination and drive and using your body is like this incredible vehicle. athletes.
You've definitely got the skill. Well, the mental skill for it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just need to get the physical one. We'll get there.
Thank you so much again, Akash, for joining us on this episode. I think everyone's going to love repeating all these layers that we know to Akash. And if anyone wants to find you, where can they find you?
Well, my Instagram is @meta_a. That's MEHDA_A. Fable and Maine is @FableAndMaine. And the podcast is Founded Beauty. Just want to say, Ashita, you've been an incredible host and obviously an incredible friend. So just thank you for making the space on rotation, and also what you're doing with Bi Rotation. I know it's going to change the industry, which already is. So just really proud of you. So well done.
Oh my God, I love you. We'll hug later.
Yeah.
For an exclusive £20 off on your next Bi Rotation rental, make sure to use the code ONROTATION. This code works for new and existing users for rentals over £30. Happy rotating.